Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into the podcast. I just want to take a moment to mention the podcast sponsor, retrogamestore.com.au. Head over there for all your Game Boy refurbish and repair needs. Screens, shells, buttons, all the bits and pieces. And there's a complete custom build made to order service as well. Also, plenty more retro gaming goodness like video cables, display stand and power supplies, controllers, etc. And you can add the code PixelPie at checkout to get 10% off your order. Also, take a moment to say if you enjoyed this episode and haven't already, give it a subscribe or follow and a review where you can. And maybe you want to recommend the Pixel Pie podcast to anyone you know that would enjoy it. That'd be really appreciated. So thanks for listening. And now let's get on with the show.
Hi, this is Tendo209 and you're listening to the Pixel Pie podcast.
And hello, Andy. How you doing, buddy?
I'm pretty good. Scott, how are you doing?
Oh, dude, I am feeling pretty good today. I want to share my experience, but like when I have these conversations with people prior to the podcast and I see Instagram and we all try to work out what we know about someone just from their Instagram. And you get a bit, but when someone's like very much just their retro gaming, then you're like, geez, it feels a bit like everybody else. You don't know their age, you know what they look like and stuff. And then
sure.
I always get this sort of like a blind date experience. And I'm sure every guest that comes on has the same, like, what does this dude look like?
Totally.
Yeah. And then you come up and I'm like, boom. And I just instantly saw Frank Zappa. So for anybody that knows who Frank Zappa is, maybe a little less crazy, a little more civilized, but blew me away. And from that moment on, I feel like I've known you for about 35 years. So there we go.
Awesome.
So enough yabbering. How you doing? What's going on?
I'm good. It's a Friday night here in Toronto.
Yep.
I know you're in the future. You the global time machine.
Yeah, I say it every time. Still no hoverboards. Don't get excited.
Every time. I'm good. It's Friday. It's the end of the week. We did a movie night with my daughters. We watched Up, we got some takeout food, and just had a nice kind of a low key evening.
Problem with those Disney movies is they always make me cry every time.
Oh yeah,
every time. There's like, can we just have a happy movie and just enjoy the story without all this death and like some of the sadness? And there's always I appreciate there's morals and lessons to learn. And they become points where I can teach my daughter, because something goes wrong and you're like, dude, it's just a movie in the end.
Yeah.
Someone learns how to overcome, how to deal with, how to be bigger, how to be stronger, how to be faster, or whatever it is. So you're trying to explain it to her with tears in your eyes. It's not very convincing sort of thing, you know. And it may be when you become a parent, you feel a bit more from it and you identify. I'm not trying to alienate anybody who doesn't have children, because everybody has sisters and parents. It can be as brothers and can be the same thing.
But
I love Disney. I do. I'm a sucker, but God damn it. I'm tired of crying every time I watch one of their great movies.
Well, here's the thing with Up, right? When it came out in maybe 2006 or 2007, I could be wrong.
And it's Pixar, not Disney, but you know, similar concept. You know,
sure. But I didn't have kids when I watched it, and the opening scene is sad. Like, you have to have like a heart of stone to not kind of at least get the lower lip quivering. Like, oh man, that's sad.
Yeah,
and I watched it. It was sad, and then I watched it again with my daughters tonight. I haven't seen it since then, and just they're going to the opening scene, and they're both just like, "What's going on?" And
I'm
like,
"Yeah,
it's fine. It's fine. No, eat your McDonald's."
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. That sounds like fun. Now, I guess starting somewhere, and then we're just sort of like, I just generally use someone's Instagram as a bit of a, you know, it's like, that's the railway tracks we cruise along.
Sure.
And as that happens, we wander through the different carriages of people's kind of experiences and lives. And obviously retro gaming is kind of like what brings most of us together. And more specifically, yeah. Game Boys tends to be the initial sort of gateway to. So I'll sort of just start, I guess, back at
sure.
Your first Instagram post, according to the Tendo 209, was 14th of July, 2021. And it is a pocket, a black pocket with red buttons and a red lens. And
right, I'm gonna play along at home with you.
Yeah. And so a USB-C, a LiPo battery, and a Pro Sound out, and the Famitsu lettering, and custom buttons and lens.
Oh yeah,
an LCD backlight. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to jam into one. And this is a few years ago. Was this like your first throw at it, or was this the first time you
kind of put something on
Instagram?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
That essentially. So I've been kind of into modding Game Boys since maybe 2016, 2017,
awesome.
Maybe.
Awesome.
I'm gonna fast forward to my Instagram. Like I have another Instagram account that's just pictures of like me and dinners I made and pictures of my kids and stuff. But I kind of wanted to show I was modding Game Boys on the side, and I was kind of sort of somewhat participating on like Facebook and stuff, but I just felt like I was like I think I should start up an Instagram account and just share a couple pictures of things I've done. That one, the black shell, I have it there somewhere, the black shell one, that my first post was just kind of, it was mostly kind of like an experiment. I just wanted to try to just kind of cram as much stuff. And it's got one of the old school backlights. And I think I had a poorly soldered 5-volt step up regulator. And it was just all kind of a bit of spaghetti inside. I'm a much better solderer now.
Yeah. Well, you learn pretty quick, I guess, if you.
Oh, yeah.
If you break a few things and wreck a few things, I guess you either give up or you get better. And sounds like you got better.
I'd like to think I got better.
Yeah. Cool. And then I guess we sort of look along, and I won't just like follow your Instagram. We won't use that, but just to kind of get a bit of an idea of the stuff we can sort of chat about. Like, and then a few posts later, you've got like, a couple of Super Nintendo games, like you got Doom, and you picked this up. Your words here, I still can't get over. I only paid $15 for a complete in box copy of Doom Snares back in 1990, that is old school, good old days. So, and I flicked through, and there's a lot of other stuff. It's not just Game Boys, there's 3DSs and there's some other consoles and stuff. And so what was your kind of, give some idea of your vintage and kind of growing up as, because I'm always interested in people that are probably closer to my age. That have experience growing up in gaming, because I didn't. And most of the people I speak to are kind of like late 20s to early 30s, and like, I'm at least 10 to 15 years past that. So what was your growing up in gaming and stuff? You would have been an Atari 2600 kid, probably.
I was born in the very late 70s.
Yep.
And my, like, I was sort of trying to do a nostalgic trip through my brain. Like, my very first memory that I can think of a video game was, I was at I think it was like with one of my older cousins, I believe. And there was a Pac-Man machine at a laundromat.
Right.
And I was maybe 3 or 4. Wow. And I remember just remember everybody was smoking just like standing there watching like big kids smoking and playing Pac-Man and just watching. Like I remember I was big enough. I could like kind of see up and see the screen.
Yep.
And I was just like, wow, this is like, I remember trying it, but that was kind of like my arcade machines were one of my first, and I remember seeing arcade machines at like shopping malls and stuff my parents would be like, don't go in there, bad people hang out in arcades, but that was the early 80s, right?
Yeah.
But
I did.
I guess like growing up, before I had like an NES or anything, I had a friend who his dad was like a computer scientist or something, and he had a ColecoVision, I believe.
Yeah.
At his house, and I remember I was in grade one, so I must have been like five or six maybe. And I would go over to his house after school. He lived just down the block from my house, and he'd fire up the. I remember their TV, their like CRT TV was their TV, but also if he wanted to play the ColecoVision, they had this giant archaic KVM switch to whoosh, switch it over or something, and then we would play ColecoVision. I remember the tourney control, like the pad with the numbers on it.
Yeah, and it's dial. Like a weird stick, a bit like a gearbox, like a
it was
ball just, joint stick, and it was very long and sort of spindly. Was it?
Well, this one was just more like a dial.
Oh,
it was right. Kind of like the rectangle, and it had like the curly phone cable, and it had like the dial, and you turn it to go left and right. And I think maybe there's a button. I don't remember.
And there was like six versions of Pong, but they were called like hockey and soccer, and was it that kind of thing? Yeah.
I remember playing like maybe Gauntlet and Ghouls and Ghosts.
Really?
I think.
Wow.
But also Pac-Man and come on, Space Invaders.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
But I also had a friend down the street who he had his first kid ever that I remember that had an NES, and I think he had his parents like to buy lots of stuff. He was always the kid at school that had like the new whatever, right? Sure. And he had, it must have been 85 or 86, and he had a Nintendo, and he had Super Mario Brothers, and I think like Ice Climber, Ice Breaker, the Ice Breaker game, I think.
It's the Ice NES. Climber, the two dudes that go up through the little levels and stuff.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. But I remember playing Super Mario Brothers, and I was just like, what? I thought it was so cool. And I remember the controller, and I remember it was brand new too. And like the buttons were really stiff because it was just like, he got it like before
everybody else had it sort of thing.
But like growing up after that, I'm the oldest of three kids and we're all pretty close in age. I was maybe 10 or 11 or 12, probably like 9 or 10, I think. But we all sort of pooled our Christmas money one year, and we went to Florida for Christmas holidays because we would drive down there a lot of we would it's like a two-day trip, and we drive down to Florida, go to Disney World and all that stuff. And me and my brother and sister pooled all our money, and we bought the Nintendo the NES pack that had the laser gun and the track, the world-class track meet. The triple game cart, and I don't remember the toy store, but I remember just being in this mall and having like this gargantuan box, and just like thinking it was like I don't know, it was like the greatest moment in my life.
A gateway to like just everything amazing, just there in your hands. That's so like I wonder these days. I mean, you know, our kids and my daughter. I can see when she gets things, like things she really wants, and she will still kind of get that, but it seems to be so fleeting now.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be that what she gets, oh, I really, really want this. Oh my God, I want this, you know, and then they get it. And then within like, I mean, I've got a single child, so I wouldn't say we intend to spoil her, but clearly she's going to get all the resources.
Sure.
But I feel like within 48 to 72 hours, she's already making a list for the next day of gifts, you know? I just don't think, like, I can remember when I got my first bike, kind of like a BMX, and it was that same feeling of like, I'm unstoppable. This is a game changer. Like, oh my God. And we lived way out in the country and like around small towns. It was like, you know, these days we find out things weren't so cool, but generally things were pretty cool. So
they were cool to you.
They were cool to us. And it's like the same thing when you get given this, especially if you've been to your friend's house and he's got it, and you're like, you're just getting a taste of it and a whiff of it, and now you're like, I've got a smorgasbord of this now in my own home.
Yeah.
And the first thing that impresses me about that story is that you and two siblings were like, huddle in, guys, let's get our cash together and let's make this work. Because often it's like my brother had it and I wasn't allowed to touch it until, or my dad bought it and it, until like he got through Zelda, we couldn't touch it. Like that's right. That's awesome that you guys could make that work. Yeah.
There was our own like the our own internal politics of who got to play what games when and but sort of back to your original point, I think the thing that we sort of as younger generation experienced was the anticipation, right? Like now, like my daughter might want, you know, she wants a book or something. She wants the new blah 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 book, and my wife will just order it on Amazon and it'll arrive in a couple of days. Or we'll get to walk down to the kids' bookstore down the street on the weekend or something, and she'll buy a book. But when we were kids, when we wanted that, you know, Nintendo, right? I'd say, you know, Mom, can I have a Nintendo? And she'd go, yeah, no, you're out of luck. Sure. And so we would see that, you know, a kid that had it and the kids at school on the school bus would be talking about it. And we'd go to the shop because, you know, that's what you did in the 80s. You'd go to the shopping mall after dinner, just walk around and bump into your friends and stuff. But you'd look at the Nintendo in the toy store and you're like, oh, I want it. You're just drilling for it. And then once you have means, right? Like we'd all, let's pool our money. And if we have this and, you know, we'll ask dad if we can have $20 and then we'll have enough money to buy. And it was done and we had it.
It's funny when I have these kinds of conversations, it starts to sort of trigger a few memories. And I can remember probably at the age of around, I guess 10 or 11, because my brother, I've got a younger brother. I've got two younger brothers, but the one that exists at the time is 5 years younger. So we're old enough to kind of go out to the malls and things. And my dad promised to me one day, we were looking at one of the hobby stores, you know, the Tamiya cars, like the Hornet and the Frog and those earlier ones. And I can remember seeing like the Hornet and the Frog and just thinking, or the Grasshopper, just thinking, I just want one so bad, so bad. Yeah. And one day my dad said, no worries, we'll make it happen. And it never did. Never, ever, 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 ever did. And it's like, I got a lot of other stuff. It's no big deal. Like I don't have any therapy sessions because of it.
Sure.
But there's always in me this feeling of, I need to just get one. I just need to, you know, now I've got adult money. And I think for me, some of this stuff with like all the retro gaming and stuff, it's almost a bit similar. It's a life that I missed out on. It wasn't that I was like, I wasn't in a salt mine or in a coal mine as a slave child, but my life didn't facilitate that. We had other things going on. And now I can kind of go back and sort of see what all the fuss was about. And I love watching on YouTube. Sometimes you'll find videos of like someone who just randomly walked around like a Toys R Us in like, you know, 91. And there's just like the walls of all the things that,
oh man.
Now you're like, oh my God, if you could have just grabbed one of each for, you know, $4 out of the bargain bin. And I am.
Oh, back when I was maybe in my late teens, probably early 20s, I had a friend who he worked at a Toys R Us kind of near me. And I would come, we'd go and like hang out, and me and my friends, we'd go and sort of loiter around Toys R Us while we were waiting him to get off work. And I remember like I would usually find myself either in front of the Star Wars figures or the video games. Yeah. And I would just, I remember like just seeing a wall, just walls, like massive walls of like Game Boy games. And like, I remember I had a part-time job and I had some money, but I didn't want to at the time spend it on games, but I just remember seeing them and being like, if I could go back in time, I'd say, you dum-dum, buy all those games. Put it in a box.
Yeah.
Open it up in 20 years.
Yeah.
You'll pay for
buy yourself a Tesla.
Yeah.
or whatever it is. Whatever. Two Teslas, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Tesla and a boat.
Yeah. I'm gonna what do we got here? One of these pictures on the Instagram is Elf on the Shelf. It's a funny thing. It started so fun for us, and now it's like Christmas rolls around. I'm like, oh man. It's so much work.
make sure my kids aren't around.
Yeah.
My wife and I, we kind of, the last few years, because my oldest she's 7.5, she's going to be 8, and she's starting to get in that sort of gray area where she's like questioning, you know, fairy tale type stuff. But my younger daughter, she's 4.5 and she's
loving it.
Innocent and shall remain so.
Yes.
But my wife and I both kind of like loathe Elf on a Shelf. We like sometimes we'll be like, oh, she's going to the North Pole for a week or something, and like girls buy it. They're like, okay, she's gone for a week, and we're like, oh, we're off.
Oh, and nice.
You'd be like, do you want to do the Elf tonight? No, I gotta do it. I did it last night.
I know, it's funny, isn't it? There's an Australian female comedian called Celeste Barb, and my wife follows her on Instagram, and she's a funny chick. But she put up a story once, and was like, she said to her husband, go and do it, go get one, go get an Elf on the Shelf. So they've got three kids, and so he doesn't really know what's going on. He comes home and puts three elves on the table, and she's like, you have no idea how much you've just ruined our life. Three. Oh my gosh.
You gotta explain it all, like, quick.
Justified and plan it. And it's good. And then sometimes when over Christmas, my daughter will be with her grandparents, and we'll like do a bunch and just sort of take the photos, and then just each day you just trickle them out.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like planned content.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Anywho, so I guess as we sort of as I move sort of looking through your Instagram here, and I start to see, and this may be something you did a while back as well, but I start to see some fairly arty kind of shells. I'm going to assume they're like your own stuff. You know, like I'm sort of up around the, just past the elf there, and there's some that are kind of like, just lots and lots and lots of different colored dots, lots of sprinkles from inside. So is, I often wonder, like with creating shells and that, is the, when you do like an arty shell, like a DIY shell, Is that related to like your daily life as a like an artistic creative type person, or are you like, don't get, or no offense meant out there, but some boring accountant engineer that needs, you know, color in their life and Game Boys facilitate that?
No, like I'm all my life I've kind of been an artist. I'm a graphic designer, web developer, sort of by trade.
Yep.
But I work sort of three quarters time at work. Like I don't work like a full day. I work part of a day. And then the rest I do. I'm a dad. Right. Yep. But I'm also like I said, I'm an artist. When I was younger, I was like really into graffiti. I was one of those kids that would tag your mailbox in your neighborhood. I don't do that anymore. I'm a grown up, and I go to grown up jail if I get in trouble.
That's right.
But I still, I've been doing graffiti forever, and it's sort of kind of part of me and my identity, I think.
Yeah, cool.
And I don't do it as much anymore, just because I'm old and I just can't be bothered to go do stuff like that. But
so you're talking legit graffiti on a wall with cans.
Yeah. Cool. If you look down my feed, there's I went painting in the fall in October with some friends of mine,
right?
So there's some of my stuff there, but
your second post of the second shell of this account is a silver pocket that's had graffiti done to it. I was like,
oh yeah,
that's mad, that looks really 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 mad.
I got it right here, actually.
Oh man, it's beautiful. Yeah. So
thanks.
Graffiti is such an odd thing, isn't it, that when done well, it's such an amazing thing to see.
Yeah.
And then there's the other side of it, which is, it's a bit like a beautiful car, and you're like, that's a beautiful car, until it's making noise in your street at 2 a.m.
Sure.
And it becomes a problem for you. And graffiti has that two sides of it. It's some of it you see and you're like, holy, especially when, and I think we fail to acknowledge the fact that you look at something on a wall somewhere and it's say the letters are 4.5 feet high, and you're like, that's amazing. And then you see the little bings on the corner and the little, you know, that kind of cartoony kind of highlighting and stuff. And then you sort of step back and go, and you, it's more like when you step up to the wall and you're like, oh wow, it makes no sense when you're so close to have that talent to be able to make something make sense.
Yeah. That's hard to do.
It's the perspective, and you know, I can barely write on a piece of paper and make the words fit and all the letters be the same height by the time I get to the edge, let alone I've only got this much wall and this is going to happen the first time. Obviously, there's a period of progression where you just you
start with practice
your initials and you just do circles and squares, but Yeah, amazing graffiti. It must, as a graphic artist, it must be fairly releasing for you because it's less conforming, it's more free flowing. It's not just
absolutely
squares and spaces and you know, real estate that just must be filled to the maximum of each point of text and borders, yeah, and blah 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 blah.
Totally. Totally, yeah, totally. Yeah. I like to do lots of different things, but I sort of merged the two things. Like, mm-hmm, I was doing like Game Boys, but less, more like I was like building them and fixing them and modding them and stuff. But I was also kind of doing paintings and stuff. But I didn't really think the graffiti paintings I was doing was really all too exciting for me. And then, you know,
try telling Banksy that.
Oh, right. Oh, he wouldn't listen to me.
God knows what's going on there.
I just thought with the graffiti pocket, it was like an old, I was reshelling some stuff and I had this like really old, it was nasty. And I thought, like, this, I'm going to try to make the ugliest Game Boy I could. And I started like kind of scuffing it up and making it look. But then it just sort of kind of evolved into this kind of experimental kind of, I was doing like kind of graffiti splatters, and I had spray painted another shell for my one daughter. She wanted her own Game Boy. So I used some, you can see it there. There's like orange and pink and blue, I think.
With the yellow lens.
That was sort of like the beginning evolution of doing that stuff. And I guess I just wanted to make a Game Boy that I've never seen before. There's so many creative people that do some like wild stuff that I would never imagine to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I was like, I just kind of challenged myself to try to like, I want to make something that I haven't seen yet. It's still evolving. And like, I don't know where I'm going to go with that yet.
When I look at that silver graffiti pocket, the V1, it makes me kind of think of, say, growing up in high school, everybody used the whiteout pens like on everything,
wrote
the names and stuff. And you can imagine the amount of Game Boys over the history of time since the first Game Boy that have had whiteout and bits of paint, and they've been decorated. Yeah. And they, you know, that's just think, you look at that and you're like, that's just some 14-year-old kid who snuck his Game Boy into algebra class, and he's just like, well, they might make me wash it off the trains, but I don't have to wash it off my Game Boy. And I don't want to stand there forever. And this take can't be done over. And it's super cool, mate. Super cool.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
No worries. Yeah. So I guess you said you still go out and paint a bit. You still.
Well, not really per se. Like, I will. I have friends that are also sort of my demographic that's still go out painting. They're grown ups with jobs and mortgages but they still go out painting all the time. Some less, I guess. I do it maybe. I might go out a couple times a year, maybe with my friends. I don't do like illegal stuff anymore.
I don't want you to incriminate yourself. But what do you guys do? Do you find a wall and just maybe paint over it the next day in guilt and go, oh no, we're gonna, or like, how do you find space now?
Well, usually because like I'm some of my, I guess, my grown up graffiti friends, they like everybody knows each other. Right. And there's guys that will, it's usually someone will be throwing on like a graffiti festival somewhere. They'll just invite us. The friend of mine lives outside of Toronto, and he has sort of a company, and he does graffiti interior murals and exterior murals.
Beautiful.
And so he just throws these little kind of graffiti jams, and he'll be like, hey, they got a, you know, I got 30-foot wall and, you know, a couple boxes of paint. If you guys want to show up, they'll feed us. And, you know, sometimes they'll, you know, give us a little cash or something, or pay for gas or something. Cool. And you just, you know, I'm not doing it for, just kind of doing it as a day out. Right.
It's a bit of a social thing, bit of a hang. It's like when you see a bunch of kind of older dudes, you know, with long skateboards or, you know, big wheel BMXs and just
like going out playing golf. Or like, I bet you guys will go out play golf for a day. I'll just go with my friends and we'll paint a wall somewhere.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So, have you, I mean, most of your Insta here is very Game Boy focused, but do you have aside this other retro gaming, like, do you have a secret, like, I don't know, Xbox 360 collection, or are you a big SNES fan, or is there anything non-retro gaming? Like, maybe you collect ceramic kittens. I don't know. What else does Andy collect?
I sold all my ceramic kittens. I guess I'm always collecting stuff, I guess. Yeah. Always kind of have been. Yeah. I collected bikes for a while, but I had to get rid of that.
Motorcycles or bicycles?
No, bicycles.
Okay.
Bing.
Yeah, what were you sort of focusing on? I mean, I'm a cyclist. I love to talk about cycling.
Sure. I think I was telling a Ninten DIY before, at one point I had 7 bikes, but it was just like I would buy some junker or I would just find a junky bike and fix it up and put $50 into it and flip it and sell it or something.
Yeah. So that's a tough just market for fun. Because there's a lot of bikes around for $50 these days.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen, there's a movie called Clunkers. It's about mountain biking started, like in California, like up there. There's a big mountain range northeast of San Francisco. So there was like 2 sides. And so Clunkers was basically a bunch of hippies that would take like kind of like these like World War II era Schwinn bikes with the tanks and all the chain guards and all that, and the big bars and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think some people would call them bloomers because they would have big fat tires on them.
Right.
And they would basically take them up to the top of this mountain. And back then, a lot of it was just sort of like big fire road. And then eventually they built some tracks in and just bombed down these tracks with like an old foam helmet. We're talking about like Gary Fisher and a bunch of people like that, that later became big names in mountain biking history. But back in the day. And Clunkers, I think you'd really appreciate it. I mean, they were like, we're doing this pretty quick. Let's see who's the quickest. And they would, race down this hill for a bag of wheat sort of thing and just have a really good time. And then there was like this bunch of guys from the other side of the hill that turned up and they were actually running gears. And they're like, whoa. And everything just exploded.
Yeah.
And that was basically where mountain biking started, from these little old,
I love that,
World War II era posty kind of bikes. And eventually they realized, these things are breaking all the time. We're losing teeth. We need to build these correctly ourselves from scratch. And, the custom mountain biking industry was born there. And then just when you see people that love something so much and they just run with it, let's just make something happen. No one's going to do this for us. And look at the industry today is bananas. Yeah. And they've got those guys as innovators and very large pairs of balls to thank for the industry,
Yeah. Well, just like Game Boys, right? Like 5 years ago, there was Kitch Bent and like a couple other places, but like there was like nowhere to get Game Boy stuff and you had to kind of MacGyver something together.
Yeah.
But like now there's all these, there's a new screen, there's just like a new IPS screen coming out every 6 months or something.
Every 4 to 6 weeks, it seems.
Yeah. Even
if you watch a few people on YouTube, it's like, here's the new version of this, version 4. And it's like, oh my gosh.
I haven't even got the last 2 ones.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. My problem with that is I find I'm so far behind. Like, I want to build one of Zypher Designs, the slab. But I need
same.
To. But I've had to order a certain screen, which is kind of like 2 or 3 generations ago. And so you're forced to go down the AliExpress road, which isn't terrible. But at the same time, there's always more dice than to be rolled than someone that you know has got current screens. So,
I was actually looking into, I had all that stuff in my cart at one point in time. And I just was like, I already have 17 projects on the go. I don't need an 18th project on the go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so you were collecting bicycles there for a while. What else?
Mostly, I have like little heaps of stuff all over the place. I've kind of inadvertently been collecting PS3 games. I don't have tons. I have maybe like 20 or 30. Yep. I just kind of came into them, sort of. I have, I mostly have my sort of main collection besides collecting Game Boys and handhelds. I also like to collect kind of weird, obscure, crappy handhelds. I don't know why.
I saw one there that someone, I think Nintendo Wide sent you, which is the,
oh yeah,
the KF2000.
Oh, this puppy right here.
That is, it's got a Game Boy lens.
Oh man.
Like so a TNG lens. What is this? Is this Russian? Is it some weird Russian thing where they take everything and just make it look slightly odd?
No, it's Chinese. It's they're from China. I bought this like maybe like a year ago from Nintendo DIY. He had a bunch of them and he was selling them. And I was like, it was a reasonable price. And I was like, sure. I've always kind of wanted to see one of these. And I got one. And he said it didn't work. And I cracked it open and I got it to work. There's no sound still. But the screen is, it's the internals are different than if you've ever looked inside the a DMG. Mm-hmm. It's very much different than what you'd find inside a DMG. Right. But the screen, like the actual lens, plastic lens, is exactly a DMG lens. I could put a replacement, except there's no LED light. A DMG has a little LED that appears next to the screen, and this one doesn't have it. And no one makes them.
So that lens that's on it, so anybody can go and catch up what we're talking about, is like a purpley, semi-translucent, and it's got a what looks like one of the original gray DMG lenses. And even across the top, it's got the kind of bit of red and white pinstripe and dot matrix with stereo sound. So that is the original lens. That's not a DMG lens that someone put on it.
Yeah. No, this is the original lens.
Wow, that's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. It's a strange little thing. It's kind of, it's lighter than a regular DMG. And like I said, the insides, I cracked it open once and I think there was like a dried spider inside maybe. but it's, I haven't washed it or cleaned it or really, I just tried to get it to boot and I got it to boot, but it's neat. And I was actually thinking that I would like to one day, you know, take it apart and give it a bath and try to find. The buttons on it are a little strange. They kind of look like the D-pad and the AB kind of look like that you would find on a GB Boy.
Right. Yeah, the D-pad looks kind of like concaved.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of oddly comfortable.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. So do you think its purpose is to play regular Nintendo Game Boy cartridges?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. From what I gathered, I read sort of like in a, I think on like Reddit, maybe they back in the, I guess, late 80s, early 90s, when Nintendo was coming out with their stuff, with their Game Boy product line, they were selling in Hong Kong, but for whatever reason, they weren't selling in China, like mainland China. So China, just someone, a manufacturer there, made a clone. Essentially, you can play. It'll play like any irregular gray Game Boy game.
That's pretty cool. I just sort of looked it up and I can see like a pure white one. And yeah, man, I mean, that's kooky. I'd be more than happy to have that sitting on my shelf in any condition. That is so cool.
It's kind of neat.
It's always so painful talking to interesting people with other interesting things that are like, I'm going to go looking for one of those. I'm at the moment in this really bizarre kind of like vortex of Disney Infinity. You know that thing?
Yeah, I've not really into it though.
It's just a game. I've got a Wii U, which I jailbroke, so I stuck it on that. And it's kind of like Skylanders, but it was a little bit different and I won't get into it too much. But they're kind of like on Facebook Marketplace and I've got a bunch of them. And you know, they're only like, you stick them on this little tray thing and then you can play with it in the game and you can level it up. And then you get like these sort of clear ones that are like, we've got one around here somewhere. Oh, here's one. Other people probably going, dude, we don't care about your childish stuff. You know, you put these on and these are like the play sets. So when you put these on, you unlock a certain like adventure mode. And so they kind of release the game, but then they release the play set. So you have to buy a play set, which have one of these and a couple of figures. And, the whole idea is you kind of like get through all the games, and then you can take Luke Skywalker into like Frozen Land, or, you know, you can bring Mickey Mouse into Star Wars Land.
Cross
IP. I like that. Yeah, it's kind of rad. But the figures are, and it's got a kind of like a Minecrafty feel to it, in that by the time they got the 3.0, it's more about your toy box and all your things, which you unlock, or you power up your dudes and you get points and you buy stuff. And so you can create Disney worlds. And and what you can also do, which is pretty easy, is you can do stuff like when you're doing your stuff with your character, these little sparks come out. Some of them are health, some of them are other stuff, and some of them like experience. And with the experience, you go up in levels and they can max out 20. So with all this, like, you can create these little like logic controllers on the table, and there's like wave generators in this trigger box on top of a tower, so that every time it repeats and sends a wave of dudes out, they instantly die and all the sparks come down the tower, and you just get your character to stand there and he just gets like juiced up. And so, like, right now as we're talking, my Chewbacca is standing, it's my Wii U's running over there. My Chewbacca is standing under the tower, just getting showered in power. And in about 2 hours, he'll be all beefed up.
I like that.
Yeah, it's really neat. And it's like, it's very simple. It's the kind of the Clone Wars type animation. So it's easy to follow, and it's not complicated. And the conversations about the Senate aren't too heavy, and, you know, you can just have a good time. But I'm
just
like,
exciting enough.
Yeah, just exciting enough. But like on Facebook, you know, you can pick up a dozen things for like $15 and this and that and the other. And you're often buying from these like people that have bought a whole bunch, and they're selling off their spares and little bits and pieces.
Or their kids don't play with them anymore, right?
I think it's well and truly over. I think it was like, I get a feeling like 2016, 2017, it was done. It's finished. So I don't think it's no longer supported online. I could be wrong, but my Wii U's jailbroken, so I don't go online anyway. But it's just another, sometimes you just need one more thing to collect, and I found it. It's hard when you just see a thing and it all of a sudden it tickles your fancy, and it's like, oh, I need to not keep looking for it, because when I find it, I gotta have it.
I have that sort of that type of personality, I guess. Like one of my lots of people are sort of big, wait, what am I trying to say here? I guess right now, yellow pocket PCBs, of yellow PCBs.
Those
are kind of like the new, commodity, I guess.
What's the go? Explain to me what this is, because I've seen it and I see people go, whoa, and I'm like, it does look yellow. Beautiful, but what's the deal?
So I'm going to explain the best that I know from information I've gathered myself
that's all I need.
So like most, they only ever occur in pockets from what I've seen. Most like probably 95% of pockets. I have a pocket board right here. The bottom portion is white, just like white silk screened over the bias and stuff. Yeah. But at one point they started to the pockets had the sort of the atomic purple, clear atomic purple, and those had white PCBs. But they came out with, at first, I believe, in 96, it was like a limited edition white clear shell, which I have. Oh, that's my other one. Like a white clear shell that had an all green PCB.
Right.
And so the thing is, I don't know, like the scarcity, like there's obviously way more white PCBs. They're the main one. But there's these green ones that you would find mainly in the clear, just like the clear pockets, but also I have the Famitsu.
Right, that's a legit one.
That's a real Famitsu.
Looks in pretty good shape. Is that the original screen? The original?
No, it's not the original. The lens, it's a reproduction lens. But
what about the screen inside it?
No, that's the screen's from another pocket. Oh, okay. I got I got this one. It was missing lens and the screen was burnt, but I have a few extras kicking around.
So what's on the shell that makes that distinguishes it as a Famitsu then?
The lettering, right? The normal lettering is just, it's silk screened on the plastic and it's just A, B, start, select. But the Famitsu, I'm not really sure about like the whole backstory with like the Famitsu
brand. I'm looking at yours now. It's like the select and start and the B and A are like a specific lettering and
they're right. Color and so, stuff. And like a neat little aside with that. So a friend of mine, Compile of Crap, who is a fellow Canadian, him and Primetime Funk, Jared, they're both also Canadian. We kind of have like a group chat we've been sort of working on for the last couple of years, actually, where we just nerd out about stuff. Compile of Crap, Nathan made some Famitsu shells. He wanted to make sort of aftermarket Famitsu shells so that he could put a IPS screen and stuff. So we looked around and we couldn't find any sort of anybody that like nobody made, like no one in the world makes them, right? So I used my graphic design skills and I took my Game Boy and photos and I vectorized the lettering for the front of the shell and sized it and stuff. And he was working with a printer just outside of Toronto and the guy nailed it. And so Nathan made a limited run of these shells. And I think he still has a couple that are for sale. If anybody is interested.
That's awesome. I mean, there's so much of that going on at the moment. People are just saying, I want this. Hey, you, let's get over here and in this corner. And how hard is it? Well, I can do this and I can do that. And looks like we can do this. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it, right? The sort of the global collaboration of, you know, I'll do this and you do this and, you know, put it in a jar and shake it up. And
I'm in touch with Jonas Retro Game Evo a lot, and he's doing a lot of the overlays
The front. Cool stuff.
The world really is his oyster, or anybody that has the skill and the time and the motivation. I can remember when I first started talking to Jonas earlier in the year, and even last year, I was thinking about, I started playing with like water slides, and I had some success, but at the end of the day, I was like, it's not exactly what I wanted. And probably due to like not using high quality thin water slides. But I was like, you know what? If someone walked up and said, hey, I want a Chicago Bulls Jordan 23 GBA, you just make the water slides and just put it on. I was like, why isn't this happening? Why aren't people doing this? And seeing stuff like what Jordan does and Jonas does. And then like what you just described there, that's exactly it. And now with all the UV printing, like, man, bespoke is still a little bit expensive, but at the end of the day, you could have anything like any shell is getting bonkers. Hey,
it really comes down to like finding a good printer. Because there's lots of people. I don't want to say lots. There are people, companies, around the world that do UV printing. Some are really good. Some, not so much.
I mean, everybody's at a different degree of. Just flicked over to have a look at Nathan, Compile of Crap, and his latest post is him holding an N-gauge up to his head. You don't realize how ridiculous that is until you see someone do it. For those that aren't familiar with the Nokia N-gauge, the attempt at a phone that plays games, or was it a gaming thing that can also be a phone?
I believe it was both. I think it was Lazy Game Reviews, I believe, on YouTube. I'm pretty sure it was him. He did a whole half hour show where he talked all about it and just sort of like its rise to the market and how it totally shit the bed.
So interesting to see such a large company just so poorly miss the mark. The funniest thing is like, so compile of crap if you want to go and have a look at an example. I'm sure you can Google it, but you've got to, so it's kind of like it's taco shell shaped, but you've got to hold it like on its edge as if you're holding the taco in your hand, and then you put the exit or the entry part of all the taco ingredients up against your ear as opposed to holding it flat like a phone.
It's
hilarious. And you've got to, the original versions, you had to like remove the battery to replace the game and a whole bunch of random stuff.
Oh, man.
And they're absolutely worth a monster now. Like if you can, you know, I know people that picked them up at like EB Games for like $45 each. They were just like boxes of them. And they just, oh man. So
see, I remember when they came out, there was a EB Games in my hometown. Yeah. And I remember seeing like a display, a display unit, and you could pick it up and go, this is kind of weird. Yes. But I also remember going back and then clearing them out, having a sack of them, and they were, I don't know, like 20, 30 bucks or something. And I was like, who's going to buy those?
Yeah,
put them in storage and bring them out in 20 years.
Yeah, that's right.
Buy another Tesla.
We can only,
we all have things that we've purchased and sold and regretted.
Isn't that the truth? One thing that you do have is a Lefty 1989 Epiphone Les Paul Standard.
This is
a guitar. I know what Les Paul means, but the relevance of Lefty 1989 Epiphone and Standard, what is all that? Why do you have a picture of this one particular guitar
Amongst
all of your Game Boy stuff?
Okay.
And this takes you back as to like, maybe this is Frank Zappa.
So like I do, growing up, I'm also musical. I was in like 50 crappy punk bands in high school and stuff. But I still play sometimes. I'm not great. I'm not terrible. I'm just kind of play. Okay. Yeah. And I have my 1989, Les Paul Standard Epiphone that I bought off some guy a long time ago who he didn't know what he had.
Right.
And then I have a Telecaster that my wife got me for Christmas a few years ago. And I have a few other guitars that are broken that I need to fix. Yeah. But my point, if you notice the date of that post, it would happen to be on the 1st of April.
Oh.
So what I did was I guess long story short, I had the house to myself that day. My neighbors were gone. My wife was at work, had the whole house to myself. So I don't often get to my neighbors. I should add, have a newborn baby. So normally I would turn my amp up to 11 and just play. Right. But like it makes the whole block shake a little bit and I don't want to, but they're gone. So I was like, I was playing my guitar and I thought it's a really good, I just thought of a really good April Fool's prank. So I said, I dropped a new song. You clicked on the link. And I know you can, if you want to copy and paste the link.
I'm doing it right now.
You can listen to my new song.
Okay. Is this going to... very good. It's Rick Astley.
You
did Rick Roll me. This is hilarious. And I do get it because the other day... there was something come up about, I follow the Pokemon trading card game a bit, and they're trying to roll out like a new version of the online game, and my daughter was sitting there, but someone came up and goes, oh, so Pokemon trading card game have decided they're gonna, it's too buggy, they're not gonna roll it out. And you're like, what? And they just roll straight into Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. And my daughter's like, what the hell does that mean? And I'm like, it's sort of this universal thing for, got ya. Like, I remember when I did my first iPhone jailbreak, it was like an iPhone 3 or something.
Sure.
And you do the whole, like, you go to SSH and backdoor and this and that and the other. And then you do this thing. And it's like, all of a sudden, I power cycled it and it's just got Rick Astley. And it's like, you've been Rickrolled, bitch. And I was like, what the hell is going on? I just wanted my phone jailbreaking and now it's got this. As soon as you Google it, it's just like, you know, people with belly laughing going, you got Rickrolled. You didn't change your root password, blah, blah, blah. You got to start again and blow it away. And it's just like, oh, and I didn't realize it was a thing. And like, yes. Yeah. Nice one. Nice one. Well played.
I just wanted to pull it out because nobody does that anymore.
No. Good times. So you're not in some crazy old like Dead Kennedys cover band?
No, not right now. No.
Yeah.
I just kind of play at home by myself while I'm on hold.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you collect the guitars or you just happen to have a couple? And
I don't want to say I collect guitars because I just have a couple. I have an acoustic in storage that I don't play, and I have a little crappy here that I just kind of punk around.
Did you kind of grow up in a punk scene, or was it something you did kind of separate to everybody else you knew?
I guess kind of growing up in high school, I grew up in a town called London, Ontario, which is kind of halfway between Toronto and Detroit.
Right.
And it's sort of like a medium-sized town, maybe 500,000 people-ish. And I just kind of was sort of grew up, all my friends, we were kind of into like graffiti and punk rock and skipping class. Being bad.
Yeah. So what was the era? What was the sweet spot for the Ramones? Because it sounds like you would have been on the wagon with the Ramones.
Yeah, a bit. I guess I was more into, I would listen to the Ramones, I guess, but more kind of like West Coast, kind of like Orange County punk, like skate punk.
Right.
Bad Religion, No Effects.
Yep.
Kind of stuff.
Right. It's funny Ramones, isn't it? Because I have this, like, I grew up sort of in Tasmania and skating, and I was never a great skater, but at the age of sort of like late high
school. Oh, I did that too.
Yeah, late high school into kind of like early adulthood. It's a really good form of transport, and you're just kind of cruising to parties. Sure. And where I grew up in Hobart, there's a lot of hills. So you got to walk up a bunch, but eventually you get to come back down the other side. So right. it was pretty good if you got to go to a party at the top of a hill, and then once you'd had your good time, you kind of cruise home. But so a lot of punk, a lot of sort of Dead Kennedys, and
sure,
I guess a lot of that sort of surf punk, you know, there's a bunch of bands in Australian bands that we used to sort of listen to, and you sort of, there must have been some Ramones in there, but just recently I would put it on and go, it's cool, like, you know, Beat on the Brat and a whole bunch of songs that are really good. Sure. But you're like, wow, it's kind of boring. Like, they really were just grinding it out and just making noise, and I guess people were just locking into that, you know, this, it's the Ramones, it's like a pillar of that era of music. But you can easily walk past it, I think. I'm probably pissing off some people, but I don't care.
It's a required reading, I guess you could say. Sort of the genre.
For sure. I mean, we were more into sort of like, even though it was generation before, it's like Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and Deep Purple was more our kind of jam as listeners and skaters and surfers and stuff. So Ramones was a bit like, whoa, that's just really loud and angry. And okay, that's fun for now, but I probably won't play it at home. So do you have kind of like a skate scene when you were growing up as well?
Yeah, a little bit. We all just, my friend group, or just sort of my best way to say is just like all the people I associated with, we were all sort of kind of a hip hop punk skateboard kind of weird amalgamation of.
How confusing was Vanilla Ice?
I think I was a little too young for Vanilla Ice. Came out when I was maybe like 13 or 14, maybe.
Yeah. I even when it came out, I was like, how does this dude not have a bunch of dudes from Compton just walk over and shoot him in the face?
Yeah.
So brazen to just roll like that. And he survived and now he's killing it. You know, like he's still doing things. I saw a meme the other day. It's like him standing there. And he's got a bag of ice in each hand. And then to his left is a baby in a pram. And I was like, oh, my gosh. The dude loves it. He's having a good time. Someone's like, mate, can you please hold these next to my baby so I can take a face? He's like, sure, why not?
Why not?
Love it.
Carry ice around with me just in case I run into.
In case I stand into a baby. Yeah, that's right.
Can I borrow your baby for a moment?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, how do you find, you said before your daughter, sorry, I jump all over the place, but I guess I'm just
sure. About so do I.
You said before that your daughter wanted a Game Boy. Because my daughter wanted a Game Boy and I made her a beautiful Game Boy and it's beautiful and she loves it. She doesn't use it much, but we're going to road trip and she's like, I'll pack my Game Boy. And at some point in that 3 to 4 hour car drive, she'll rip it out and I got her a copy of Super Mario World or Brothers or whatever it's called. And she's there playing it. And I'm like, that's what kids throughout the last 50 years did with Game Boys, road trips. But now it's IPS and runs for ages. And that's just a real joy to see her experiencing that same sort of, because games like that on a road trip are, they're a little bit almost meditative. There's not a lot of commitment. They're just like thinking about stuff. They die, they look at the window, they see a bunch of cows or a weird billboard and just get back on with their life. How was it with you and your daughter? Was it a request to kind of have to feed it to her or?
I think like my oldest daughter just was kind of curious with my Game Boys. And I said one day, I'll make you a Game Boy. And she's like, okay, great. And I put it together and I let her pick out, all the colors and stuff. And she played it a bit, but she was just kind of like lukewarm to it. But then she'd see me play my 3DS and she'd be like, I don't want to play with this little backlit thing that I have to scrunch up. And So I quickly fast forwarded to we don't have a Switch or anything in my house.
Likewise.
But maybe 2018, 2019, I used to buy tons of stuff from J4U because it was dirt cheap back then. I would buy, I was making some macros. At one point I would buy like maybe I'd like probably like 10 or 12, just I would buy ones that were under $10. They were so cheap. Like now they're not. I found, because whatever I do for my oldest daughter, I have to do for my youngest daughter. She demands equality to her sister. So I just found two DS lights that I had, kind of cleaned them up because they were all gross, and threw some R4 cards in and just loaded them up with games. And that's like sort of like my oldest daughter, at least that's like her main daily driver, that she's
the DS.
She wants to play. Yeah. She wants to play video games. She'll like go and play like Link or she really likes Cooking Mama right now.
Yeah.
That's kind of a fun game.
The DS is cool, huh? I've got the same. I've got a couple of them, one for myself and one for my daughter with R4 cards. And I really kind of, I think that was, I've got a 3DS too, which I adore. I really love it. Like the 3DS is, for me, there's so much to offer there that I probably, between that and the DS and the other things, I probably don't need a Switch yet. Like, there's stuff. But I probably don't need it. Like, I've already got everything. I get enough satisfaction.
Yeah.
I play the Wii U a bit, and I'm sort of surprised it didn't do so great. But at the same time, I could see how it was just in that weird, awkward part of time.
It's like, the teenager of handhelds or something.
Yeah,
it's
the awkward one. Exactly.
I do the majority of my gaming just mom on my computer. Mainly, like if it's not handheld, I just have like emulators or Dolphin emulator or Mac has it's called Open EMU, and it's just a sort of a kind of a RetroArch type.
Like a MAME type thing.
And I just have I have some game pads, and I just sit here and I'll play.
Do you use the 8-bit-o units?
No, I don't. I just like I literally have like an old like Walmart. Like knockoff PS3 controller that I painted and took apart and fixed it, and it's actually pretty good.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
What sort of gaming are you doing on PC and stuff?
Lately, I've just I just kind of dabble with I guess like GameCube. Been downloading a lot of like GameCube games.
What are you playing? I've got a GameCube with the GC Loader. So I'm in a similar situation, but with the OG hardware. So what's getting you into, what are you playing on GameCube that you want to play?
Mainly, I was like last month for the IG Retro Gaming Club. I can't remember the name of the hashtag, but it was Mario Kart. So I was just playing Mario Double Dash.
Right.
And it's lots of fun.
It is.
And then I was just kind of getting into just other driving, like Need for Speed type games or, Simpsons Hit and Run. Oh,
yeah,
Hit and Run.
Yeah,
I could play that for days.
I haven't got I've got it bombed up on there, but I'm like a million times. The Double Dash, my daughter is weirdly good at the balloon fight in Double Dash. Like she just, I can get two or three games ahead and all of a sudden, I don't know, I get cocky and she just has this massive comeback. So she's she's the reigning Double Dash balloon fight champion of the house.
Nice.
I'll probably tell this story a few times before, but Mario Kart Wii was the first game that she beat me on. And it was a long time where I'm like, you know what, I'll give you $20 if you ever beat me on Mario Kart Wii. She's like, really? I'm like, yeah, sure. And this was a couple of years ago when she was probably about eight, maybe seven, I don't know. And like when you're playing together, because of the elastic banding, you know, if I was playing and I'd be going quite well, she would come sixth or seventh because, you know, I'm kind of raising the bar and all the other characters.
Right.
But when she would play, she would get some like seconds and thirds and firsts and stuff. And she just got better and better. And then one day she just crushed me over a four race tournament. And there's your $20, mate. And she was like, well, you know, 30 if I do it again. I'm like, whoa, just slow down. I think you proved your
point. She doubled her nothing, dear.
Yeah, she tried. But I said, just keep the $20, man. Yeah.
One wager at a time, please.
Yeah. Have you had any like gaming kind of with your daughter yet?
Not really. No, they don't. My youngest daughter, she'll just kind of mash buttons and stuff. Mm. But my older daughter, she just kind of, she's really into like reading books. She'll like go and spend hours on end in a room reading, but she'll do that when she's gaming. She'll just be like, hey, do you want $100? Do you want some chocolate? And she'll just be like, what? She'll just be playing focused.
Wow.
That's
good.
Not a lot of,
it's good to see a child that will just lock in and stick to something. We all kind of have this like short attention span these days where we're kind of like, we're constantly being like here and here and here, and the attention's just being drawn left, right, and center and all that sort of stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
Do the, does your wife get in on the gaming at all? Do you guys have a secret Mario suit, like Smash Brothers thing going on or something?
Well, the thing is like, my wife doesn't like, she says she doesn't like games. She doesn't like, she's always kind of like, you know, lukewarm interested in anything gaming.
Right.
But if you sit down on the couch with her playing, you know, any kind of Mario Kart driving game or Tetris or any kind of puzzle game anything, I won't have it for long because she'll just.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a pretty healthy Tetris party on the Wii competition going on here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. My wife's quite good. She's quite good. I mean, I'm not great, but she can, you know, I can't walk into, like, we usually play like three, a bit like tennis where, you know, best of five games and best of three sets.
Mm-hmm.
And she will beat me as often as I will beat her, which is just nice. I mean, I'll kind of get some runs where I'll have several sort of nights or set games in a row, but she'll come back with just crackers where I just can't get it together. And she's... And that's really fun when they kind of come into your world a bit for a change.
Yeah. That's fun.
So are you sort of collecting games and stuff for the Game Boys, or you just gather, you know, sort of as the stone keeps rolling, or do you have specific goals with any of these sort of things?
My main thing is like, I don't have any like collecting goals. I just kind of like at one point I wanted to have every pocket color. Like every color of pocket, and I'm just kind of like, it's, I don't want to do that anymore. I just want
to. The price starts to change those sorts of things, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I guess with games, I've always like, I still have a like one or two of my like original first games. I have a copy of Metroid that I bought when I was in I must have been in grade six, maybe.
Right.
When I bought my my first DMG, and I've had this copy of Metroid forever.
That's unreal.
I don't have it handy, but like it's all faded. There's a picture of it somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
But I just like over the years, I always had. I still have my original Indigo Game Boy Advance somewhere that I won't mod. It's just sitting there, dirty. I should give it a clean. Mm. But I just kind of would. I had some games from when I was younger that I kept. And you know, over the years I sold stuff and I regret that I sold it, but I just kind of would, a lot of stuff I got a long time ago too. And I would buy like job lots, right. For like donor boards and stuff. And it might come with, games and I would, last year I sold a box of probably like 100, just like crappy Game Boy Advance games, for kind of like $100 to some guy, just cause I didn't need them. But I use that to, I try to, you know, if I make money off of something, I'll use that to put towards something else. And I just kind of like get games if I, you know, if I happen to see something that looks good or, you know, an opportunity. And I've had some, like a couple of good finds. Again, not really like setting out to be like, I'm going to find a copy of blah, blah, blah. And
yeah. I see you've got a couple of micros, or at least some micro stuff amongst it.
I do, yeah.
Do you have like one or two and just a bunch of faceplates you've picked up? Or
Yeah. I have, sort of going back to the things I regret, I bought a micro in 2005 from Toys R Us because like I read something about them coming out and I thought they were super cool. And I went to Toys R Us, I bought a micro, saved the box and everything. And I sold it a couple of years ago, like before... I could have charged a bucket of money for it. I have two. I have like a nice black one that has some power issues I need to fix. And then I have a blue one. And I just have lots of faceplates. I have I have like a couple faceplates. I won this really cool faceplate from a raffle last year. I've had some people looking at next up places.
There's a Team Rocket Team Rocket faceplate, and then there's like that really cool Sonic one, which seems it's confusing, but then you're like, no, that's cool. Kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. And I bought a bunch of like clear micro faceplates for I was going to paint them. I was gonna do like the sort of internal splatter thing, but it just I was trying to make templates and it's such a pain in the butt. So I'm just going to stick stickers on them. And I've had like other people do like sort of like trades and stuff. So I have a whole stack of them just kind of it's like shoes, like, you know, what faceplate am I going to wear today?
Yeah.
But the whole thing is my hands are really big.
Oh, for sure.
Really small.
For sure.
I always say I feel like Andre the Giant holding a kitten.
I'm huge. That's funny. Yeah, the micro, I think I might have missed the boat. When I was sort of getting into this a few years ago, you know, there was some getting around. I probably could have got a decent one for like maybe $150. And now it's like, $300 for something. It drives me bonkers. Before you mentioned J4U, and even I can still, it's still cheaper for me to buy. If I've got like a few projects, like I want to do like a color build and a DMG build, and maybe I'm going to do a pocket or something, which doesn't, that's like a whole year for me, to be honest. I don't do a lot of building. But if I get some shells off someone that are really nice, I want to use, or, you know, I will go and buy, it's still cheaper for me to buy like, and you start like when you go to J4U and you filter with obviously in stock, and you start at the cheapest, and they're around about $25 to $30 US, which is around $45, you know, and Australian basically. So I can still get three or four Game Boys of various, there might be a speaker broken or it might be a button doesn't work, which you think is going to be probably okay. I get three or four of those shipped for like a bit over $200, and that's still pretty good, because here you're still paying $100 will get you the roughest Australian, the roughest Game Boy you've ever seen. Like, it's been sitting in a bottom of a pond. someone's just Googled up how much of these on Facebook and, oh, this one's worth $150. You're like, it's not.
Yeah.
So you just got to wait for these people to, I'm just hoping these people that couldn't sell them don't just throw them away thinking, oh, this must be absolute crap. Because everything has value, just not $150. So hopefully they just put them back in the box or their drawer for another couple of years. And then they go, maybe $65, $70 is more realistic. Okay, now I will buy your Game Boy from you because it's worth my time. Sure. Yeah.
Well, that just brought me, that reminded me of something, how I was talking about the yellow boards, right?
Yeah.
So the thing about the yellow boards is there's no people always ask, because that, so the thing was, at one point I had three yellow boards. Got a couple of orders of donors and I just happened to find the three yellow boards. And I was like, what? I've been searching for years. I'd seen pictures of them, never seen one. I had three. Right. I did a build with one. I sold it. I sold another one and I kept one that had some, I had to fix it and stuff. So I had to fix some of the traces on the front and had a power regulator in it. So I just kept it because it's kind of a little dodgy, but it has this cool scar in the front.
Yeah. Cool.
But there's no like formula to find out where to find a yellow board. Right.
Yeah.
They usually might come in like silver shells, but I've also got them in green shells. I've heard people get them in red shells from Europe, from Japanese releases, North American releases. So there's no rules, right? So I was on J4U the other day because I was looking for, something. And on, they always have their like main feature things. And on the front page, they had a gold, it said like gold. I posted it in my story. I really hope it's still, I'm just going to dig it up because it's so ridiculous. J4U, here we go. Oh, they dropped the price. It's a yellow motherboard, Game Boy Pocket, gold Game Boy console, Japan. The other day it was, here, I'll shoot you the link. It was the other day, it was like $965 US. And now it's like only a little short of $800 US. But I think somehow they sort of caught wind that these yellow boards are special,
it's just a silver pocket from the outside.
Obscure or something.
And somewhat beaten too. Like
they're just totally charging way.
Yeah.
More.
So it's just like a gold, is it? Yeah, it's a gold, that kind of weird gold.
Yeah.
And it's got a burnt lens and a bunch of bashing and it's a lot of
color, good shape.
No, a lot of color fading around the battery terminals, possibly even some corrosion there. Lots of corrosion on the battery terminals.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the only way to know is like when you pop the battery cover, you can see in through that little air gap where the battery cover clips in, you can see the green there. Wow. I mean, I guess everybody's out there to make a buck, but $796 for effectively a yellow board.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's the only reason that it's that much.
Yeah, damn it. And you just like going through them like it's a bit like Pokemon cards, opening a booster and oh, I've got the good card, and you just happen to have three at some point.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh well.
So that's, I would call that a cash grab from
people,
but you know, all their other stuff is sort of relatively priced.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing I bought from them was a light. I bought the gold Game Boy Pocket light. Mm-hmm. And it's in like, oh boy, it's in like 98% good condition.
Oh, nice.
And I bought it like, I want to say at least a couple of years ago. I only paid about $220, $240 for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in this condition, I think is a really good, I think you could just about double it for what it's worth now. I have no intention of selling it, but yeah, really, really, really got lucky that time. So I have a light. So, you know, originally I was looking at the, whatever it is, the 25th anniversary or the 20th anniversary micros, you know, with all the Famicom colors and stuff.
But sure. Yeah.
Yeah, they're getting expensive now. So, I'll just end up with probably a janky one somewhere or something. Yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, everything's, I was looking here. What's this? MGB-LCPU-02. It's just like a naked board. It's a PCB on your...
Right. Oh, so that is... Oh.
Are you one of these weirdos that's getting naked boards and building them component by component?
No. See, I got it right here.
Yeah, there you go.
So about a year ago on... Before I was on Instagram. So like a year ago in one, I think it was maybe like the Retro Future Facebook group, somebody posted, hey, there's a store on AliExpress that's selling these unpopulated boards. And I think they were about maybe like $30, like not a lot of money, relatively speaking. And it's a double, completely unpopulated board. And so I thought it was super cool. It's clean, and so I bought it, and I got here, it got to my house, and I posted photos, and a lot of people are saying like, oh, it's counterfeit. But like, my argument is, if someone is going to go to the trouble of counterfeiting like no one is going to go to the trouble of counterfeiting a perfect Nintendo
I think PCB. I think in adult words, it's called a reproduction, which like 98% of the Game Boy modding market is using. Everything, buttons, shells, screens.
It's all reproduction.
It's all reproduction. That's a long draw.
But so the thing is, like, I was lurking around the AliExpress store, and they sell surplus like electronics, like old surplusy stuff.
Old
new stock. So I messaged because messaging sellers on AliExpress can be, you don't always get a clear answer, but I just said like, where did you get these? Are they real? And they just said they're old failed boards that we're selling. So I suspect what happened was they have 1997 on them. In 1997, these boards, they just didn't pass like a QA test at the Nintendo factory. And normally at factories, when stuff doesn't pass QA, they'll recycle it. They'll grind it up.
Just destroy it, yeah.
But someone... probably kept these, and they probably sat in pallet in the warehouse for 20 years, and someone found them and said, hey, we can sell these.
Yeah, right. So what do you think? Do you think they're old, new old stock, or do you think they're repos?
I think it's old new stock. Like if someone the thing is, like, if someone went to the trouble of reproducing these, it's a lot of work, right? I'm sure like the parts they could like refabricate these from the dies and stuff at the original factory, but like still that's a lot of work to do, right? If you look at like a counterfeit or a counterfeit or knockoff PCB on like a game, for example, like they're bad. Like they have the globs, and they're a mess. Like they're not made. They're not made with quality. Where
when you think about the complexity of like an entire Game Boy board. And I think this is well before the time when you could just go on some archive of, you know, saved whatever the file is, and you can kind of give that to a PCB creator and go, hey, here's a file from 1989. Can you remake a bunch of these? He'd be like, this needs a lot of work to be able for software 40 years later to understand what this even means. So you would have to go and create that entire file, whatever that file's called, from scratch based on the original. And it'd be interesting. Have you sat down with like an original from a Game Boy and kind of like just done a quick like?
I have looked at
that looks pretty similar.
I've looked at another when I got this. I looked at a board that was the same, that I had the same model, and it's the same. Like it's totally the same.
Yeah, to the naked eye, you can't tell the difference.
Like I'm like being a designer, I feel like I have a good eye for like typography and stuff.
Yeah,
and it's like the font typography, it's exactly the same. If maybe the traces are dodgy, I don't know. But like, I just feel like if someone's going to go to all the trouble of perfectly reproducing a Nintendo board,
yeah,
like
for 30 bucks.
Why are they charging $30 for it? Yeah.
Oh man, that's cool. That's cool. There's so much stuff like that. I know what I was doing yesterday. I was watching some YouTube and I found this couple of young, an American guy and Australian guy wandering around Okinawa, obviously in Japan. Mm-hmm. And there was like an old kind of tuner slash speed shop with the front doors, the roller doors down, and the old sign was rusted. Just in the middle of a town. And yeah. down the side was parked all these old Japanese sports cars, like an old WRX and a Skyline and this and that and the other.
Sure,
and
yeah, sure, sure.
I was like, literally there was still wheels and tires stacked inside and parts and things. And I don't know how old this video is, but at the time they didn't know the history. Like it's like maybe someone had died and the family had inherited the stop and they just rolled all the roll doors down and just walked away. And yeah. there's these cars just sitting there. Last time they were insured, registered or whatever was like 20 odd years ago. And I always just like when I think the Light was the first Game Boy I'd bought from Japan. And then I got later from J4U a couple of DMGs for work and stuff. And I get this kick when I get this DMG and it may be just that little bit of weird sentimentalism, but I get this Game Boy and I'm like, and I open it and I'm like, so the last time these two shells were apart was when it was made in a factory.
Yeah.
Late 80s. And so you kind of open it up and it's like, it's a bit like opening the Ark of the Covenant sort of thing. And you don't know who put it together and what its life was like. And I kind of say a little thank you for sacrificing yourself. My old eyes can't play you in your original form. I'm going to use a lot of you. And you kind of put that shell off to the side. And I know some people have boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of shells, but at such a small scale for me, I can still keep the shell. But that nostalgia of, it just blows me away. And I like these boards are like, wow, they literally could have sat in a box on a pallet in a shed for 30 years. And someone's like, this could still be, people will pay for these things. They're crazy. And you did.
Well, there's one of my favorite things is to open up a donor Game Boy and just like having to give it a little extra crack just to break the screw that's been in there since 1996.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny when you, especially when you're looking on J4U and you might be looking for a pocket or something and all the different pockets have got like just random stickers on them. And obviously some 10-year-old kid is like put the stickers of his favorite Pokemon all over it. And you're I don't know if I could take them off because that to me, it's a bit like someone's graffiti. Like that's what they personalized it. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I won't buy that
one. I know there's a couple, there's a couple people on Instagram that sort of honor and cherish like sort of found stickers, right? I know Pixel Fix and Poop Scarf, they both have Sticker Boys shells that they've they got the original shells from wherever and they have like the stickers from
them
1996.
That's cool. Oh, there's so much nostalgia. I don't want to keep you too much longer because it's getting late there. But there's a cartridge here that I want to ask you about.
Sure.
And you've just got, it just says Jumbo Video.
Oh.
So I thought it was a NES cartridge and there's a label on it. It's a SNES cartridge and there's a label on it that says viewing problems. Most viewing problems can be adjusted by tracking. If problems still persist, please inform upon return Jumbo Video. Oh, so this is Jumbo Video was the video store. Right.
Yeah.
London, Ontario. Please be kind, rewind. You don't have to deal with that anymore. Oh, right. So what's the deal?
No. Okay. So it's sort of obscure chain of events. In one of my earlier posts, I went to visit my parents and I brought a bunch of my games back that I had, including that Doom complete in box, Doom, and like a couple other things. And so there was, I had two or three games that I brought home that I have a SNES in a box sitting over there, not doing anything. I don't even have the cables to hook it up. I'll hook it up eventually. I was scrolling through Instagram a couple days ago, probably last weekend, and someone was doing a claim sale Yeah. And someone I followed, I happened to just totally coincidence scrolling through, and I saw it Ken Griffey Home Run Derby or something for SNES, like the cart, and I was like, I have the box for that. Like I have the SNES box that I bought whenever ago in my box of junk for my parents. Mm-hmm. So I saw the guy that claimed it. I'm friends with, and so I just said, "Hey, do you need the box?" And he's like, "Yeah, I actually do need the box." So I said, "I sit in my basement, not do anything, pay for postage, and it's yours." And I was digging around, and I found another game, just like the game in a box, like a crappy golf game. Mm. But I said, "I'll let's send it along too." We came to an arrangement and stuff, but it was just the back of this golf game. I just thought it was like an awesome retro sticker. Cause even back then, it's the late 90s when you'd rent a video game, we'd all snicker and be like, "Oh, you can't rewind a video game." Right.
That's classic. I guess it's just that generic label. I just slapped on everything.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That is really cool. Yeah. I mean, my mother-in-law keeps her eye out for stuff, and I think like the first time she kind of grabbed something, she's like, "Oh, I'll just see if I can get the price off it." I'm like, no, just leave that, because that was like, I think when I bought a Mega Drive, the Mega Drive 2 a couple of years ago, and it came with a bunch of games. It was just a guy who's like, "Oh, my brother is and I had this growing up." There's lots of like sports games and stuff. And one of the games, and these were all in case, which is pretty easy for Mega Drive because it's all the hard clamshells.
Sure,
and one of the games was Theme Park, and the receipt was in there for it. And I sort of regret selling it now, but at the time I was like, I just want the console. I'm not interested in any games because I was getting an EverDrive for it. But the receipt for Theme Park, which I guess came out early 90s or something, was like $90 Australian.
Yeah.
Back then, I was like,
"Yeah,
that's cool to have that receipt, but I can't believe they paid that much for this game, which is not really that great a game back in the day. That's probably like, I don't know, probably over $200 these days for a game, in inflation. But the receipt alone was like, oh my God, that's sick. Who keeps receipts? That's great.
I have a vivid memory of when Super Mario 3 came out. There's a kid that I knew. That I got Super Mario 3 and you don't. But I remember vividly seeing it at Kmart, maybe for $99.99.
Wow.
That's Canadian. And Canadian is about the same as Australian.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think. But I remember it was $100 and I was like, wow. And now it's not.
Right. Yeah, now it's not.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Good old days, I guess. And I think it's, I've spoken to a number of people about buying and collecting. And I think a lot of people have gone from, I'm going to kind of like a completionist attitude to what makes me feel good. And I'll just focus on that. And I think that's safer. It's safer.
Yeah.
You get more, satisfaction from just buying what you want as opposed to, shooting for collections and specific items, because everything's cool when you just get what you want. Sort of thing,
Totally. That's what I do. I just, if I like it, I get it. And if I don't like it, I might sell it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So you're just chugging along. You have no sort of plans to leave your day job and become a Game Boy creator or a,
I don't know. I would like, ideally I would like to, I've been really enjoying lately, doing builds and like, making custom shells for people. Yeah. I have a few commissions sort of on the go right now.
Yeah.
And if I could do this full time, it would be great. I don't, between you and me and everybody listening, I don't foresee that happening, but I just kind of do it because I love it and it's fun. And I like sharing my art with people. And if people want to buy my art from me, I love that too, because they get some of my art.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
No worries. Well, look, we might sort of start wrapping it up, but I could probably talk to you about a whole bunch of stuff for hours and hours. I'm always interested in what people's kind of upbringing in retro gaming was, but especially, you know, from another country, you know, like what was it like being a Game Boy nerd in Canada, or what was it like being a Game Boy nerd in the UK? And seeing the difference in, it's almost like when you ask people about growing up, like their culinary growth, like, well, we had a lot of steak and veg, or we had a lot of pasta in this part of the world and stuff. So
it
varies from, I mean, some people, I think like most of the Americans don't even say SNES, they say Super NES. Whereas I think as Australians and Canadians would go SNES, you know, and then there's like the Genesis and the Mega Drive. So
sure.
It's always interesting. Yeah. So look, we'll go on with a few sort of shout outs, I guess, for lack of a better term. You've mentioned a bunch of people. I'll sort of remind you of who those were, and you can elaborate or add or whatever. I always do one myself, which is for this episode is GB Retrospect, Nate Salpas. And look, it's a lot of good builds. Recently hit 1,000 followers. Doing it for those that want them. But just, I guess with Nate's Instagram, it's just super clean and the photography is amazing. And he's got
he has really nice stuff.
Some nice backlighting. And, you know, I think for anybody that's kind of looking to, people will sort of say, how do you get good photos, this, that, and the other? Not me. I don't really get great photos. I just sort of use my crappy Android phone and a bunch of Instagram filters, and you can pull off a couple of tricks, but people will soon work it out. But there definitely is an art or a skill, or you need a certain space to make it look really enticing. And a lot of Nate's photos are like that, you know. A lot of clean builds. It's a bit like taking like an old Mustang and making a new Mustang, and all of a sudden you're like, I can see the Mustang, but I can see the current, the modern take on it. So, I would encourage. I just like having things in my feed that I really enjoy. Like, it's never really occurred to me, but one of his builds that kind of catches my eye every time I flick through is it's a yellow DMG with a black lens and black buttons. And I'm not sure, but I'm like, that looks mad. I really, really freaking like it. I think there's a bunch of boxy pixel stuff in here too, which is well out of my price range, but holy cow, it looks gorgeous when you see a bunch of it in one place.
It is fancy. It is nice fancy stuff.
That's me. So like throughout the conversation, we've mentioned a few people: Nintendo OI, Compile of Crap, Primetime Funk Mods, Pixel Fix, Poop Scarf, just a couple of names that jotted down. So look, this is your opportunity to add to the list. This is not an ambush, and no one's going to get forgotten. And go for it.
I've met so many awesome people. Sort of up till when I started my account, I was just very green at Instagram and sort of trying to figure, I was old man using Instagram. Kind of figuring out as I go. But everybody,
you know, everybody
is super kind and helpful and friendly and encouraging. I maybe want to focus more on my fellow Canadians. Mr. T Peg City, he was a lot of help, sort of giving me a little insight and encouragement and stuff, especially when I was starting off. Next Stop Please has been very also a good sort of collaborator. It also, she's in Toronto. Nathan Compile of Crap and Jared. Primetime Funk. Good collaborators. Little Leaf Modding. In Quebec. She's I talked to her a lot about modding stuff. She's also does some amazing, awesome work too. I'm sure you're familiar with her work.
Very much.
Who else? Oh geez. Oh, I feel bad if I'm forgetting.
Look, if there's other people that you think later on, you just shoot them through. I'll probably
sure
some clarification and put. I always put this in the show notes. So
yeah,
if after this you go and sit on the toilet for 20 minutes, and you're like, oh, this person, you just shoot them through. You know, it's all good.
But I also want to, shout out to some of the other like kind of painter, sort of shell painter,
for sure,
Game Boy artists, like Kiki 8-bit.
Yeah.
Pixel Dust.
Yeah.
And come on, brain. Glue Brains.
Oh, yep.
She's, you know, a great, a yep. great artist.
Kelsey's a good egg too. Yep.
Yeah. Daniel Bloom.
Yeah.
Yep. He's good. So many people. Cadex Modding and Geekamy and Double Jump Customs. We have like sort of like a group that we all talk about painting stuff. We chat with sometimes. It's good creative, you know.
What was the one before Double Jim? After
I said Cadex Modding.
Yep.
Geekamy.
All right.
I'll get you the link.
I'll get some clarification later. Hey.
When you look at a name so many times, and then you try to say it. Like, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. So many. I've been just chatting with people that are trying to think who else. Takezo Retoro.
I was about to say, when you're trying to work out names you can pronounce, he always comes up. And when you read it and you look at his name, you're like, it's not that complicated. You just break it down. And then you look away and try and say it. You're like, oh my God, it's a weird mind bender sort of thing.
Yeah. I chat with him about that's the thing. I talk to so many people about just wild ideas and just creative feedback on things. Super Gozy Land Spain. I chat with Hugo a lot about some shell designs. I might be doing a collab with him a bit. Nice. Martin, Mr. Noodles Mods.
Mr. Noodles. West makes me hungry.
Oh yeah. Totally. Funny thing with Martin, we both sort of kind of came on the scene at the same time, and we both kind of were like, hey, we're both new, so let's be friends. And we were chatting all the time and we're doing trades. One of my shells that I actually wrote Noodles in graffiti. He commissioned me to do a kind of a graffiti weathered destroyed shell. I sent that off to him. So we'll probably be seeing it soon. Who else?
You get me thinking. I haven't yet asked anybody like commission like an actual pixel pod cover shell yet, but gee, a graffiti pixel pie podcast pocket or something, that'd look mad. Yeah, we'll see how we go.
Step into my office.
Okay. Will you accept a Les Paul in payment for it? Because I can only pay you in guitars, if that's all right.
Sure.
I mean, I know what you mean. There's just so many people, and you don't have to mention everybody, but I guess that just shows, it just highlights, you know. And like, I've just jotted down about 20 names, and I've had at least a conversation like this with at least half of them, and then I'm aware of the rest, and it's just so diverse. And it's kind of what I really love about the this community, like the Game Boy within the retro gaming community. And it's sort of like this, you know, off the main street, down this smaller street, through this alley, between these two kind of like old rusty gates, and through this other alley, and there is this little community garden where everybody's just like growing carrots. There's just enough sun comes between the buildings to make it all just, and everybody's just like swapping carrots for cauliflower, and you know, it just swapping.
That's an amazing analogy.
Yeah, and that's what it feels like. And I'm really, and that when I kind of started the podcast, I'm like, I want that community to realize how great it really is, and how fortunate we are. And it takes work to keep the gates kind of closed when it gets a bit silly, and to make sure the aphids don't come in and start destroying all the produce. It takes work, and we're all a bunch of grown adults that, people are making beautiful shells, and people are buying shells and putting food on artists' tables. But at the same time, we've been a bunch of adults, and I really, really enjoy being able to be a kid as an adult.
Yeah,
and not feel like, oh, should I say that, or is that cool? Because it really doesn't matter, you know. It doesn't.
Right.
I think you just highlight that with that massive list of diverse people from all different walks of life.
It's country.
Yeah, you're right. On you go. Continue on, mate. Sorry.
I was just going to say the thing. One of the things I love about this community is before I started my account, and I would sort of follow people on my other account. I sort of grew and admired and was inspired by these people that are now my peers.
Mm.
Right. Mm. And I would never like, there's not a lot of, I guess, subculture communities maybe that you can do that where everybody, you know, there's no egos and there's no, there's, you know, I've met my share of people that I don't associate with and that's fine. But for the most part, everybody's really nice and super cool. And it just, it's kind of oddly refreshing that everybody's really nice to each other and it's nice.
Yeah. And I imagine like, I'm not an arty person, but I've been around long enough to kind of have a stereotype of artists that maybe a little bit prima donna or I've got what it takes and I don't understand why I'm not getting success and things like that. And that can be whether that's like paint, drawing, music,
sure,
literature. You know, everybody starts with a passion to be creative and thinks maybe I can make a living. And, you know, as we get older, we start to realize, I think I might have missed the boat on that. And they can get sad and upset about the fact that it didn't work out. But then you can just realize there's a bunch of people over here just doing it. The beauty, I think, of the Game Boy thing is you've got the artistic side and you've got the technical side. And it kind of comes together and it scratches a lot of itches for a number of people. You know, I've had a few people on that all they really do is get an old Game Boy that looks a bit rough and just take it apart and clean the heck out of it. And if anything, might put an IPS screen in it and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's all they're doing. And it's
there's
like,
there's nothing wrong with that.
No. And that is like a satisfying job. It's just repotting the plant, cleaning the roots up. And now it's growing tomatoes again. Someone can actually use it. All the way up to the crazy ones that are like replacing traces and, you know, Nat's like cutting boards in half and squeezing them and flipping them around and doing this and creating that. And, you know, people that are putting like Markiplier, putting like a little pie in a Dreamcast VMU. And you're like, whoa, that's like, but you can fit in there somewhere. Somewhere there's a little spot for you.
I'm finding my niche, I guess. And I'm just like, I'm just kind of doing it for fun and I'm not taking, I'm not taking it too seriously. And I'm not.
There's no goals. Yeah. It's just kicking around and having a good time.
Having fun.
Yeah. Cool.
Having fun, making friends, making cool stuff.
I still, every now and then your voice reminds you of some like late night kind of radio DJ guy. Smooth, gonna give him one like smooth tones from Do You Like the Bee Gees or something like that, you know. Anyway, mate, look, we'll end on that note because that's super duper positive. Awesome. And I appreciate your time. I really do. And I enjoy your Instagram and anybody that's
thank you
listening and doesn't already follow Andy Tendo 209 and all the links will be in the show notes. Give Andy a follow and all these other people we've mentioned and just keep contributing to this super positive, happy veggie garden down the alley behind the gate around the back of the building. And I will be in touch and we'll be seeing you around, mate.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for having me on, Scott. I really enjoyed chatting with you. I'd love to chat with you again.
Yeah.
Probably chat with you for like a week straight.
No worries. Yeah.
Stop to eat and sleep and stuff.
I know what you mean. All right, bub. Well, you have an excellent rest of your evening and good weekend and week and month and so on. And we'll be in touch, eh?
Yeah, all right. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Scott.
No worries, buddy. See you, mate.
Bye for now. Bye for now.